The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we continue our Wednesday program, all the madness, having a great discussion with a colleague, a Buff State alum.
Yes.
It's great. Another Buff State alum here in the building. Really great. Great conversations.
You ready for this?
All right. What do you got?
This upsets me because this is a benchmark in my life. This came out yesterday. The game of dodgeball. I can't believe we're back to this controversy.
Here we go.
The game of dodgeball is more than just a popular playground activity. It is a tool for bullying and oppression, targeting students, a trio of Canadian researchers claim.
Okay.
The researchers argue that there is a hidden curriculum of dodgeball that reinforces the oppression of those perceived as weaker individuals through the exercise of violence and dominance.
Sure.
They claim dodgeball, which pits two teams to eliminate each other by hitting the opposition with rubber balls. I'm sorry. I was trying to fake some seriousness here to this whole discussion, and then I had to read that line.
Right.
They claim dodgeball, which pits two teams to eliminate each other by hitting the opposition with rubber balls, doesn't actually help students.
It doesn't? Why doesn't it?
If you practice ganging up on people, over time, you'll esteem ganging up on people, said David Burns, a co-presenter of the study.
What? As if we actually do this in real life. After playing dodgeball, we grow up and go, hey, like you're in line at a grocery store. Hey, let's all throw something at that guy that's writing a check.
If that's what you want, then dodgeball is an excellent tool to that end.
Bullying. Give me a break. That's a false premise. You started on the wrong premise. It's targeting, not bullying.
The researchers argue that dodgeball instead teaches students to dehumanize one another.
Okay, fine. Whatever.
And create unsafe conditions at schools.
Well, no. If you fill the dodgeball with water and freeze it, yes. I'm not admitting to ever doing that.
But wait a minute. Here's their major point. Okay. Ready for their major point?
All right, what is it?
Dodgeball is the only game where the human is the target.
No, it's not. Because
you're throwing the ball at the human. Hitting the human is...
Okay. So officially in hockey, the human's not the target.
In hockey,
okay, fine.
In hockey, you're pretending...
that it's not.
You're pretending that it's not.
In football, you're pretending the kicker is not. That the quarterback is not.
By the way, the
target.
But the human is a target in football.
It is
the human
quarterback.
The ball, right? And the running back
and anybody with the ball.
Anybody with the wide receiver. Right. Anybody with the ball is a target.
Right? Can you imagine? Oh, he's got the ball. We got to let him go. sorry, he gets away.
And then.
Wow.
They were asked the researchers, "What about football? Well, we don't play that here in the country. Well, yeah, you do. Canadian football. We said, we don't play football in our country.
Yeah, exactly.
Dodgeball is the only game where the human is the target. Other games, no other games focus on it. It's tantamount to legalized bullying.
No, it's not. No, it is not. I mean, you've got an entire defensive line that's going at a quarterback or the running back. And that's the idea. And the people in the way of the quarterback or running back, or wide receiver or whatever, are also targets. I mean, especially on the line. The other people are targets, right?
Well, I liked a couple of years ago when they did the research and said football is the most warlike.
Right, yeah. In terms of strategy, maybe.
Because of the strategy behind it.
Right.
It is promoting war.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, and they said, obviously it was because you could see these players, well, it was like a war out there today.
Yeah, right. Exactly. we really had to battle. Yeah. No, it's not the same.
And then you have to strategize after every play. I mean, that's
right. That makes right. It very right. Much. Or wait and see what Tony Romo is going to predict before the play.
remember, he's the field general.
Right.
Very, mm-hmm. very warlike.
Yes.
Somebody remember that was the whole thing with remember the Star Spangled Banner. It's a military industrial complex sport.
Right.
They play the Star Spangled Banner. It's required. And then look at all the terms here. Field general. We're going to war. The battleground on the field.
Right.
Oh God, shut up.
Well, you know, remember when the militarization of the police and we said no, the militarization of baseball. They're wearing helmets. I mean, it really has become ridiculous. It as if people who play dodgeball, first of all, really? Dodgeball's the sport that you want to pick on? Because how big is dodgeball, really? It really is a school ground sport. I don't even know if it's still played. Actually,
I don't think it's played much.
Probably because of liability, right? Because the idea is to hit the other kid with the ball. But here's
the thing, and liberals do this all the time. Liberal adults analyze child games from an adult perspective.
Yeah, right.
Which is asinine.
Mm-hmm.
I go back to the... one of my favorite WKRP episodes of all time, when Dr. Johnny Fever is interviewing somebody who is supposedly a child psychologist.
Right.
Who comes out and says, children from the adult perspective are insane.
Right, exactly.
And it's true.
Yeah, no, it is.
If adults acted like children, we'd say they're insane.
Yeah. They're children. Exactly. I remember my cousins. It's Texas. In the hot summer, there are very few things to do if you can leave the house. So my cousin says to me, hey, you want to go jump off the roof? I said, what? He said, jump off the roof. And all of a sudden, I got excited. I said, yeah. And he says, we got some old mattresses in the backyard, and we just jumped down. And we did that for hours. Yeah, that would be insane if I went to my next-door neighbor and said, hey, Don, you want to jump off the roof?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, we used to jump off the roof into my buddy's pool, and then they moved the pool like 10 more feet, and we still jumped. And then sometimes we'd hit the side of the pool,
and
we did insane things. Mm-hmm. But here it is. Researchers acknowledge their report will be criticized by many who argue the game is fun, but they are adamant that things be done differently. We're not anti-competition or anti-challenge. These things need to be done in an educational context. No, they don't.
No, they
don't. Sports does not have to be done in an educational contest.
The nature of competition has its own lessons.
You know, I talked about the fact that this irks me in particular because I'll always remember Saturday morning gym, Herbert Hoover High School, town of Tonawanda, New York. Tonawanda means swift water.
Mm-hmm.
Right, town right next to the Niagara River. Niagara River about 7 miles before it goes over the Niagara Falls. That's what Tonawanda is, the Indian word.
Okay.
Herbert Hoover High School, Saturday morning gym. And we played dodgeball and basketball, but the first thing was dodgeball. And so I showed up, and there was nobody more scrawnier than me as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a senior in high school, just so people understand, I was 5'2", 98 pounds. When I was, this would have been in sixth grade going into seventh grade.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was tiny, but I hadn't even gone to the school yet, but I was for some reason allowed to go to the open gym. It was an open gym.
Right.
So I went there on a Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
First thing was dodgeball. And so you get with all the kids on your side. They put everybody on one side, everybody on the other side. Okay, here are the teams. And then everybody starts talking to each other, strategizing a little bit. Who do we try to take off first? So there's the team concept of it. Well, my team got killed, and I was the only one left, and there were probably 10 on the other side. I took them all down. You talk about I was a hero. That lasted a year.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody forgot that. It was my think about this. It shows you how pitiful my life in sports was. That was my greatest sports moment. There was never a greater sports moment
right.
than in sixth grade for me because I remember the joy of it. But I remember also the strategizing beforehand where it was very, very team-oriented. Then as your team got out, then you realized you were fighting for your whole team. And there I am alone, and you've got 10 guys targeting me. I don't even know how many dodgeballs they had.
Right.
Were there maybe five or six? I can't remember.
Yeah.
But they were coming at me. And every time I was able to do it, my team's on the other side going crazy. I wasn't even doing it for me. I was doing it for them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was really what people talk about, the fact that, you know, and again, you have to look at it from a sixth grader's perspective, not an adult. Mm-hmm. All those 10 kids were targeting him. Yeah, that was the challenge of it. In sixth grade, I knew it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I started taking out a couple of them, I started thinking, my God, if I could ever do this,
right?
What a great thing this would be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the thing of adults trying to put adult standards on kids' sports is just moronic and idiotic.
It really is.
And if I would have been put out after taking out a few of the people, everybody would have said, great job. You took out a couple. You were really outnumbered.
Right.
Well, did you feel like you were bullied? I knew they were all coming after
me.
And I knew there were more of them than more of me.
Right.
I didn't view it as bullying on the street where somebody was trying to beat me up. It was simply a sport. I understood that as a six-year-old. Adults, butt out.
Yeah, right. It really is insane when the adults try and get into the, you know, so-called insanity of a child's mind. Because it is that, for them, it's that discovery process and that challenge. Because kids don't know their ability or their limits until either they discover them.
That's a great
point.
Or
somebody tells them.
No, but that's, for example, I was a scrawny little kid. I never accomplished anything in sports.
Right.
That one moment, I accomplished something that everybody in that gym recognized, and they were extremely happy for me. I mean, that was, to me, it built, I made friends off of that in junior high school then. Because when I went to that junior high school then, because this is during the summer, I went to junior high school a couple of months later, people remembered it. You're the guy that won the dodgeball thing. That was amazing.
Right.
Because all the kids were there.
Well,
it was teamwork. It was, all right, you won for us. I mean, it was everything that you want. It's everything that you actually want. Now, for the other team, see, if I'm an adult, I'd be saying that the other team actually needed counseling because the scrawny little sixth grader beat them all.
Right.
Everybody looking from the other perspective that maybe they need help because they lost. And so they were devastated for life and never accomplished anything because they lost.
Right. Well, I mean, look at some of the greatest players in the NBA. But like Steph Curry, he's not the tallest guy in the NBA. Try and make the case. I mean, there's not the advantage of he has a, because that would be the mentality. Well, he has a disadvantage. You're going to tell a young Steph Curry he has a disadvantage?
Michael Jordan couldn't make his high school basketball team.
Right. You're going to tell them, well, sorry, you don't. And so what you're looking to do is to prevent them from discovering what their potential is. Exactly. It's because I said limitations earlier. It's not limitations. It's ability. Because, frankly, if they put in the hours, they're going to find the ability.
Right.
But if you shut them down, they'll also find the limitations quickly.
For God's sakes, it's a game.
And all
the kids knew and know it's a game.
Right.
It's the adults that are trying to make it something bigger. Oh, we need to have every game with the educational context of the adults, ensuring that there's... No, you don't. Let kids play.
Exactly.
Just let them play.
Yes. There's going to be bruises. There's going to be... And you know what? There's going to be disappointment. I remember one of my granddaughters years ago. She came home. They had finished the season. It was baseball. And they'd finished the season. And I said, well, how'd it go? You know, I mean, they had a get-together for the teams. There was only a handful of teams. How'd it go? It went okay. Well, did you get a trophy? Because I had missed it. I had been out of town. I said, did you get a trophy? yeah, we got the participation trophy. You know? I mean, a second place trophy or something else, it would have been, look, here's the effort we've made, and we can try harder next time or whatever it is. First place trophy obviously speaks for itself. But they know. You can't change the truth with children.
No, you can't. No.
Ridiculous.
The kids understand it's a game, the adults don't.
Exactly.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Road check is a critical aspect of the Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance's strategy for keeping our highways safe. This year, the Inspection Blitz will take place June 4th through the 6th and will focus on steering and suspension systems. Start preparing for road check now with the following safety tips. Make sure you have no visible fluid leaks anywhere in the steering system. Inspect suspension components such as U-bolts, airbags, and mounting, springs, and all suspension mounting hardware. Lastly, listen for any air leaks in the air ride suspension. Take your road check prep one step further. Stop into a participating TA truck service May 1st through June 6th for a free mid-trip inspection to help avoid being placed out of service.
This maintenance tip is brought to you by TA Truck Service. More bays, more expertise, more solutions.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. We're talking about the study on dodgeball. Let's go to Tom in Atlantic City, who's a teacher. Tom, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Great show. I discovered you years ago, deliver newspapers, and I'm doing it again, and I'm glad to hear you guys.
Thank you.
I'm a school teacher as well, and, you know, it's interesting. Not only have schools done everything possible to take accountability and responsibility and discipline out of the school for kids, but now superintendents and principals can get a hold of some idiotic report like this and damage children even further. And when I told your the screener, the actuality with dodgeball couldn't be further from the truth with this thing. I watch every month we have this program, Positive Behavior Initiative. Of course, it takes away discipline and consequences, so it's not great. But they get some kind of reward. They all want dodgeball, so we go play dodgeball. My principal doesn't like it, and I told him, I said, come watch them. Kids who don't usually talk to each other, kids who don't really, and sometimes even do have a conflict with each other, find themselves on the same team. There's camaraderie. They work together.
Yes.
They laugh together after the fact. Nothing could be further than the truth than this moronic study. And, you know, people have to stop doing studies. I got to be honest with you.
Well, you know, something, yeah. As I said, well, you know, that when you play in dodgeball, that's true. The kids that you normally wouldn't associate with, you're strategizing.
Yeah.
And then when I was the last one left and there were 10 guys, I'd walk over to the side when all the balls were on my side and the guys, okay, here's what you got to do. Take one ball in one hand. And they were wanting to help me and they kept cheering me. And I never thought I was being bullied. I knew I was in a very bad situation, but I'll never forget it. I was thinking the whole thing was strategy. Could I possibly do this? Bullying was not anything that came into my mind because I knew it was a sport. I wasn't on the street where somebody was trying to beat me up. It was a game.
Absolutely.
Right.
And you know what? In life, you find yourself at a checkout line with $22 worth of groceries and only $20 in your pocket. You can reflect back, hey, I got through 10 guys trying to throw a ball at me.
Yes.
I think I can get through this situation.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Tom. We appreciate it. Thank you.
It's just ridiculous. Adults have to stop.
They really
use
really
adult standards
really
to
do.
Judge kids when kids are playing. Let kids just be kids.
Right.
Let them play a game.
Yeah.
Let them fall down. Let them get back up again.
And that's it.
Let them be.
Well, I mean, because you can empower them along the way to say, okay, hey, sometimes you have to point out the lesson. Hey,
certainly you do,
You know, this was a loss, so let's get together on what we can do better and improve our own skills, but mostly enjoy it along the way.
show that never stops. Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. So we had to just tell you about the new dodgeball study because these people are just—they're nuts. And it's too bad that adults just won't let kids be kids, and right. that adults, for some bizarre reason, wish to put adult standards on children instead of letting them just play games and live in a child's mind.
I know what it's like to be overprotective. Trust me. And I learned a lot of lessons from my kids, from my grandkids, that you got to let it go. Sometimes it's better that you let them play in the mud. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you let them, go out, kind of discover things. You keep the watchful eye. You stay involved. But especially when it comes to sports, competition has its own lessons. And that's the way it's going. And so does the value of learning about the values of trying harder, to practicing, learning how to get better, learning how to improve yourself. You cannot put a price on that. That's something that children will take with them forever. That's the whole point, is that, the caller mentions, being in line and you're a couple of bucks short. I can get through this. But the idea is what? Well, you know what? Next time I won't be, because I'm going to go out in the world and try a little bit harder. This time was a bit of a setback, a bit of a loss. I'm down by a couple, right? I mean, you can make that analogy very clearly. So what is it? Living in my car taught me that I don't ever want to live in my car again. That's what it taught me. And it was, and I wasn't down on myself. It was just, it was a matter of fact. And by the way, choices I made, I knew it then. I know it today. I wasn't a victim. I was, I can do it this way. And I want something, and this is how I can achieve that goal. And that's what it was. Wasn't the best of situations, but it did play out. And again, it taught me lessons. But with children, it's a time in their life when they can afford to learn those lessons, right? When you become an adult, those lessons are much more difficult. They have such a tough impact, a negative impact, and it can be a real setback. So you don't want to send them out into the world, but that's what we've created. We've created a couple of generations that goes out into the world believing that the world is just going to be there for you and deliver everything to you. And it's not that way. You have to make that effort. Even Denmark knows that. the proposal to say you're going to have to work 37 hours. Yes. If you're an immigrant to Denmark, if you're going to come here, you're going to have to work 37 hours a week. So if you want any benefits, in other words, you're going to have to do your part. But it really is about, again, I think something that you cannot put a price on. When they learn that accomplishment, whether it's work or the work that goes into practice and competitive sports, it has a terrific benefit that you can't take away from that point on once they see that benefit.
Two other stories I want to make sure we get in this hour. The University of New Mexico is considering whether to build a large border wall around its perimeter mm-hmm. to protect the campus community from criminal activity.
Okay.
The proposed 10-foot wall, the 10-foot tall wrought iron fence with sharp points at the top, would be used as a security barrier between New Mexico's largest public university and the rest of the city, reports the Albuquerque Journal. The university has faced everything from homeless people on campus to drug users locking themselves in bathroom stalls to get high to hundreds of car thefts and even rapes, the newspaper reported. Consultants paid to help drum up ideas of how to keep this campus safe had suggested the 13,000 feet of fencing But a campus spokesperson told the Journal there are no imminent decisions about perimeter security, and any strategy involves multiple things to consider before moving forward. According to the university's most recent report on criminal activity on campus, in 2017, there were 18 rapes, 12 cases of fondling, 7 robberies, 15 aggravated assaults, 211 motor vehicle thefts, 4 arson cases, 39 burglaries, 16 liquor law arrests. I just have a feeling the liquor law arrests on a college campus might not be settled with a wall.
Probably.
8 drug arrests and 1 illegal weapons arrest. Unlike many state large large state universities, University of New Mexico is in an urban center of Albuquerque where crime, notably car theft and violence, are ongoing concerns. Mm. But still, the belief, again, from the consultants paid by the university, is a wall or a slatted fence.
Barrier.
A barrier.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm reading this other story here from in Chicago.
Hmm.
Wow. Illinois gas taxes, 19 to 38 cents per gallon beginning July 1st.
It's going from 19 jumping to 38?
38 cents.
Wow.
That's Illinois' gas tax. That's
right. The state
tax.
Right.
Wow. Makes the state one of the highest in the nation for taxes at the pump. Now, the good thing is they're talking about, because of the glut that we have right now, that by the end of the summer, gasoline could be down under $2 a gallon. Well, that would be here in Texas. That means it would be under $9 a gallon in California.
Right.
Okay. I'm exaggerating a little bit here.
Maybe.
But wow. Wonder what it's going to do on the border.
What?
For example, Illinois and Indiana, just. Illinois is going from one of the lower gas taxes in the region to one of the highest. Cities in Cook County also have the option to raise gas taxes by an additional 3 cents a gallon. Drivers will also see a $50 annual increase in vehicle registrations for most vehicles starting in 2020, and that's because, and everybody listening, in Illinois right now, you understand the problem is you're not paying enough in taxes. You need to pay more. Selfishly keep
it's not the
more
spending.
Of what you earn.
It's not the spending.
Right.
You're the problem.
Yeah, it's not the spending. You're the problem. It doesn't matter who it is. This is going to add up to several hundred dollars no matter what is parked in the garage at night. Gas stations who continue to lobby for business on the state border will have a new edge if drivers can get cheaper gas in Indiana, Missouri, and Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Drivers are willing to drive there to fuel up. You'll have highs in the summer and lows in the winter. It's just making that cheap $2 per gallon we saw this winter even less of a likelihood. We may be stuck with $3 per gallon the majority of the year. But there you go.
Yeah.
But then again, don't complain. Because that's the problem. The problem is not the spending in Illinois. It is that the citizens of Illinois, you've been too selfish with your own money.
Right. And, and you should keep voting the same people into office.
Yes. Continue. Well, I did see that. I did see there's a movement now to secede from Chicago.
The rest of the state.
Right.
Oh, that's funny. That's hilarious. But I mean, it is that's the mentality in the high tax states. It's not our spending, it's not our irresponsible behavior, it's you not handing over enough of your hard earned money. How dare you?
Well, Casio Cortez's latest comment that the right to have a home is more important than the privilege of making a profit. I don't even know what the heck that means, but, because she just, it's almost as if she just blurts out words. By the way, that's coming out again that anybody who insults her, it's because of misogyny. It's sexist, right.
You must be filled with hate if you debate her.
Right. We want everybody to let you know that it is, when we take on Ocasio Cortez, it has nothing to do with her being a woman.
Right.
Because we are absolutely positive that we know it, we have stated it, that liberal men are just as dumb as she is.
Yes.
This is not a sexist thing at all. There's no misogyny here.
It is stupidity has no gender.
It is It is not the gender. It is the mindset. It is what is in her mind.
That's right.
That doesn't make much sense at all. It's interesting that she said that, though, that because that's one of the debates you and I have been talking about this the last couple of days. One of the debates going on right now when Hickenlooper said socialism isn't the, you know, it isn't, you know, we socialism isn't the route we should be going down. And he got booed.
Right.
One of the I don't know, 0 or 1% candidates there for the Democrats, John Hickenlooper, who came out and said socialism, he got booed. And there is a realization. You know, there is a realization because I think that you'd have some of the Democratic Party saying, look, we can promote socialism, but it has to be the Denmark kind of socialism, which is a huge social welfare state, but a much freer economy to pay for it. This is really the interesting thing. Some Democrats are now realizing, I think Hickenlooper's one of them, that, look, you can't go socialism across the board because you got to pay for it.
Yeah.
This is something that Ocasio-Cortez doesn't understand. That's why she's saying she's trying to somehow connect, you know, the apples to oranges, that the right to be given everything is more important than the privilege, whatever that means, to make a, by the way, it's a right to make a profit, not a privilege. Mm. It's not something the government gives you. You have to work your butt off in order to do it, and government should butt out completely.
Yeah, government doesn't allow you to do it.
But it's the fact that they don't understand, and some Democrats do and some don't. And I think this may end up, this is, I think, a little split that you're seeing, you know, from Democrats right now, that there are some Democrats saying, look, we can't go the Obama or even the because Obama wanted to, you know, he wasn't promoting manufacturing, but we have to have a viable business and industry base in order to pay for the social welfare programs. That we can go socialistic on the social welfare programs. We can't go socialism when it comes to the actual economy, because we can't, if we go socialism on both ends, we can't pay for the social welfare state.
Right. So instead of full-on socialists, you go socialism creep. Is that a mission
creep? Socialism
creep,
right.
And speaking of which, Joe Biden could be the guy to take that on. He could say, listen, we're not going to go full-on socialist. We're going to go socialism creep. And who knows creep better than me? I'm the captain of creep.
How did I know where you were going there?
I'm the creep. I'm the captain
maybe
of creep.
The clue was creep.
Yes.
That's
yes, maybe. Yeah. Didn't see that one coming.
The guarantee of a home comes before the privilege to earn a profit.
Privilege. We allow it. It's a privilege. Look.
Thank you. Thank you, AOC, for letting me live my life.
Right.
I appreciate you,
thank you
giving me the privilege to make a profit.
Yeah. The right to a home. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So who pays for it?
Well, there's a right to home, then there's a right to water, then there's a right to, you and you said this a long time ago, there's a right to water, there's a right to food.
Right.
Everything should be guaranteed. Your entire life should be guaranteed.
100% no means test, because if it is a right, it belongs to everyone.
Right. So transportation is a right, right?
Yes.
Transportation.
Free Uber.
You've got to be able to get somewhere, right?
Right. Free Uber. You think the Uber drivers aren't making much of a profit now? Wait till the government takes it over.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. Senate Republicans showing opposition to the president's proposed tariffs on Mexico, saying the president's overstepped his authority. This is up to Congress to do. Here's Rand Paul.
What you may be finding if we try to run government by emergency is it may solidify opposition. Even people like myself who are largely supportive of President Trump, largely supportive of his initiatives, I can't be for letting the president have all the power, though, that the Constitution gave to Congress. In order to use this emergency power, that there will be a privileged vote. A privileged vote means it can't be blocked and anyone can demand it. I think there will end up being a vote on this, and I really do think that there may be enough numbers of people who think that we shouldn't be allowing one person to make this decision that we actually may have enough to override a veto on this.
Part of it is, and Grassley brought it up earlier, saying, look, the president's overstepping his bounds because the law that he's using is a law that is supposed to be used for what? For freezing assets.
Mm-hmm.
That it's never been used for tariffs before. And they're like, the president is using the tariffs as part of negotiation and instead of for when it's for a national emergency, and he's trying to claim both.
Right.
And Congress said, nope, that's the Republicans in Congress. So whether they'll have a vote, whether they'll have the votes, I don't know. But even if you get to the House, even though Democrats are stating that they are against the president doing this, would they vote against the president because they view this as the president hurting his own economy?
Hmm.
So that's you and point. I wondered that. What would right. the vote be? Would the Democrats say no, or would they give this to the president thinking if he's going to ruin his own economy, let him do that?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across the world and America, 24/7. Because we're podcasting, that's why you can listen during the day. So those people that have always complained you guys should be on during the day, you can listen during the day.
We were going to go 24/3, by the way. We decided not to. We go the full measure.
RedEyeRadioShow.com.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. In the news today, Eric, what's the latest tweet?
So the president in the UK, this is so great. It was a few hours ago. There have been several since, but none like this. I'm sorry. I just love it.
We can't stop laughing.
I know. It's you got to laugh. So the president on Twitter a few hours ago, about 3 hours ago or so, plagiarism charge against sleepy Joe Biden on his ridiculous climate change plan is a big problem, but the corrupt media will save him. And here we go. His other problem is that he is drawing flies, not people, to his rallies. Nobody is showing up. I mean, nobody. You can't win without people. The president tweeting from the UK a few hours ago, a little over 3 hours ago.
Now it's day over there. So,
yeah.
It was still early when he was tweeting that. It was still early.
You know, that's a good point because that was 3 hours ago, and it's, I don't know, is it, 6 hours ahead of Central Time, so it's mid-morning now, but that's a good point. It was early morning. But this president gets up very early, we're told. He sleeps. We were told years ago, before he ever ran for president, that he sleeps 3 or 4 hours a day. And I think that's what he still does, 3 or 4 hours a day.
Wow. I couldn't do that.
Yeah, I do it, but I don't have the luxurious surroundings that he does.
And the plagiarism charge is not that he had the same ideas, but it seemed to be right out of different pamphlets,
right?
You know about the about the whole thing of capturing carbon dioxide and all that stuff,
mm-hmm.
but it said look, it was right out of the actual books. It wasn't the same ideas. He was actually copying the
right.
sentences,
right?
So
yeah,
of course that is what plagiarism. Is. And so, look, everything that I've seen Biden come out with the last couple of days is just typical leftist stuff. Remember, the most important thing he wishes to do, and he made that clear the other day.
Yeah.
It may be different next week, but the number one thing that he wishes to do, as soon as he becomes president, he wants to ensure that in America, it is forced upon people that a male can be a female if a male wishes to be a female. That's what he sees as the nation's most pressing issue.
Right.
Think about this. That's the lead guy for the Democrat Party.
Mm-hmm.
I understand why people look and I'll say they're nuts.
Right.
They're just nuts.
Yeah.
All of them.
Yeah. I mean, if you're looking at it, they've gotten so far away from the very fundamentals of
everyday people's lives. You pointed something out yesterday or day before about how, you know, when it comes to the manufacturing base, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't long ago, what, 10, 20 years ago, the Democrats owned that.
They owned that rhetoric.
You know, when it came to, you know, well, factories shutting down and everything else, and, you know, and Bill Clinton still today on NAFTA, I signed it, but I wished I hadn't. But still, they owned it. The whole working class thing. Now, it was tied to the unions, clearly, but they owned it nonetheless, right? Today, they're so far away from that. Because think about what that is. I mean, if you're talking about the working class, that's the middle class. That is the everyday person, right? You're trying to make that political connection and motivate a base to, you know, be on your side, that you are going to, you know, the whole, I feel your pain, you know, they're going to be your hero. Well, a couple of things. The far left doesn't need a hero because they've got me and I'm the boss. But beyond that, now they're into the identity of it, and everyday people are looking at that going, yeah. Can we get back to jobs?
Yeah, but now if you're a Democrat and you talk about that you want the greatest American jobs,
right,
you're considered a white nationalist because you haven't, right, included illegal immigrants in your call for great American jobs. It has to be great jobs, but not great American jobs.
Take a look. You know, socialism isn't the answer. Boo! The boo translates into socialism is the answer. I mean, which it's not. But
no,
I mean, that's where they are.
When you start booing God, let's be honest.
Yeah, that's true.
If you're a student of history at all, when you start booing God and booing capitalism,
mm-hmm,
I don't know, but I get memories of the former Soviet Union.
Yes.
Sorry. Yes. That's what I go straight to because...
Right.
The godless communists.
Yes. Well, it's so funny because the Democrats are, you know, with this whole, the entire charade and scam that was the Mueller thing and the Russian interference. It's the same side that's working to be more and more like the former Soviet Union every day. You know? I mean, Bernie. Well, the former CIA director who actually voted for a communist.
When you see, and we had just talked about this a few, well, more than a few minutes ago, but last hour, AOC stating that the right to own a home is more important than the privilege of making a profit, as if making a profit, going out there and working hard and bearing the fruits of your labor is considered a privilege. It's something that government allows you to do. That somebody out there who is not you,
mm-hmm,
other people,
right,
are the ones that allow you to go out there and work hard and earn what you have worked hard for. Think about what type of a radical position that is.
Mm-hmm.
We would all like for people to live in nice homes, but a home is not a right. Because that means the money must be taken from somewhere else. Somebody must be forced to give you that money. Opportunity is a right. Freedom is a right. Guaranteed outcome is not a right. And that's the radical positions that the left holds. That doesn't mean the society doesn't have, as you and I have talked about before, that society, because you and I both believe this, that we have an obligation and responsibility to give back,
mm-hmm,
to society. And, well, we hope that when we are eventually judged for that,
mm-hmm,
that, you know.
Not by Mueller.
Not by Mueller. Well, then I was
by a
say,
greater power
I was
than Mueller.
I was going to say by our creator. Okay, we've just lost every liberal out there, so I guess we can move on. No, but we believe that. I mean, that's what we believe. But there's, mm-hmm, a difference between believing that you have a responsibility and an obligation to give back than somebody else mandating that you give back and give back in the way that they wish you to give back.
Right.
That's what we object to.
Mm-hmm.
So
but it's really interesting when you see that. And I think it was very telling. If you wish to get into somebody's mindset, AOC's mindset, or the liberal socialist mindset today, think about that. Think about how that goes to the core of immorality when somebody believes that it is a privilege for you to go out. That's and a privilege means somebody awards you that. Mm-hmm. Somebody allows you to go out,
right.
work hard, earn money,
mm-hmm.
and then keep that money so you can use it and you can experience the opportunity of freedom and you can control your life and nobody else can control your life. You control your life,
right.
because that's what money gives you. Money gives you the ability to experience the opportunities that freedom has to offer. They view that as a privilege that the state should reward to you. Mm-hmm. You want radical? I dare anybody to say that that is a moral position to hold.
Yeah, right.
Forget about the way that she explains things. Forget about her videos. Get straight to the mindset and the ideology that she's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That government allows you to do that at their whim.
Right. And they can take it away.
That you, yeah, exactly. And they can take it away. They'll still force you to work,
mm-hmm.
but they can take away, you know, and it's not a reward. They can take away what you have earned. And it is a privilege yeah. for you. Government hands you the privilege to work and keep what you have earned.
The Constitution,
wow.
the Bill of Rights, is not a document that is a situation where men are creating and assigning rights. It is acknowledging the rights endowed by our Creator. In other words, you were born with these rights. It's the opposite with the left. They want you to believe man assigns you the rights and on a whim can take them away. Because if you do believe that man assigns you the rights, now government can afford you more rights, but we're talking about the Bill of Rights, the Constitution. It acknowledges the rights that are given to you were endowed by our Creator.
Right.
And if you believe that man creates such rights, those basic rights, then you believe that man can take them away. And that's false.
I think it's very important to break down what they say on the left. And believe me, we're going to have the opportunity to do that over the next year, to break down the statement. Because when she said that, mm-hmm. nobody really breaks it down. When she said, you know, the right of owning a home is more important than the privilege to make a profit. Yay!
Mm-hmm.
Let's break that down and see right. what it really means. And when you break it down, it's frightening.
Mm-hmm.
It's frightening
it
when
it really
she
is.
Believes that the government has the power, that it is something that somebody else gives you. Somebody else gives you the privilege. You are handed. A government bureaucrat tells you, okay, you can go out, work hard, and you can reap what you have earned. And
right.
we will allow you to do that until we allow you not to do that anymore.
Right.
And that's why I said basically when you people ask me what my political philosophy is, that's when I turn to somebody who says that and I say, get out of my face.
Mm-hmm.
Get out of my life.
Right.
Butt out. I want to be left alone.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the founding fathers were really talking about.
Yes.
I want to be left alone to do the things that I wish to do.
Right.
Liberal Democrats like Ocasio-Cortez in saying that proves the point that we made. They do not believe in freedom. They do not believe in liberty to the point of they believe they can hand out. Okay, I'm handing out these privileges here. Okay, you're allowed now for this period of time to go out and work hard and keep what you have earned.
Right.
But remember, it's a privilege. It's not a right.
Like some kind of government work release program.
Yeah, great point. No, I agree. 866-90-RED-EYE.
In 2012, new federal school nutrition standards went into effect. Those rules limited the types of milk served in school cafeterias. Flavored milk had to be zero-fat milk, skim milk. So what happened to milk consumption in school since 2012?
Milk consumption's decreased 10% over those years.
Brandon Lipps heads up the Agriculture Department agency that runs the federal school meal program, and he told a House panel that, of course, U.S. milk producers did not like the rules or the results. Plus,
when you talk about the nutrients that are provided in that milk as part of this meal pattern, if kids aren't drinking that, that's a problem.
So in May of 2017, Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue said,
"We're allowing 1% flavored milk in our school lunch program."
But now some research has suggested 2% in whole milk may not be bad for kids either and could help reduce child obesity. So one lawmaker asked Brandon Lipps if USDA would allow whole milk in schools. The answer,
"We want the milk pattern to be based on science. The Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee is looking at some of these questions now."
Those experts working on the new edition of the government's dietary guidelines due out late next year. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. I just got to play this audio clip just for the fun of it.
All right.
This is our audio, just fun cut of the day, just for the heck of it. And this is because, you know, Biden and the whole plagiarism thing because of the climate change that he got hit with yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
This also happened this week when they were talking about Biden embellishing the truth. And I wonder if people, the people at CNN and MSNBC are going to go after Biden because they don't view him as a candidate they want because they go back to 1987. To find a lie. Here's this.
Eye-opening lead in a New York Times profile of Joe Biden's 1988 presidential campaign, the first time he ran for president. He lied to voters, according to the New York Times, quoting aides of Biden's, about having marched in the civil rights movement. This is Biden making this false claim in 1987.
When I marched in the civil rights movement, I did not march with a 12-point program. I marched with tens of thousands of others to change attitudes.
And the New York Times reports, quote, "More than once, advisors had gently reminded Mr. Biden of the problem with this formulation. He had not actually marched during the civil rights movement. And more than once, Mr. Biden assured them that he understood and kept telling the story anyway." That is really, really weird.
It is. And the story was a reminder that in that 88 race, he was one of the younger candidates in the race. He was 44 years old. He was the new generation. But, you know, if you haven't read the book of What It Takes about the 1988 campaign, rich chapters of Joe Biden and others, but it does point out a problem, a challenge for Joe Biden. Has he fixed that issue? When he gets very comfortable out on the stump speaking and other things, he has tended to embellish. He has tended to, you know, make things sound slightly rosier than they are. Now, his aides went back to say, look, he was in office marching for the idea of civil rights, but was not actually marching in the streets. But that would not fly as much.
But he was, everybody just laughed.
That's not going to fly.
Everybody on the panel bursts out laughing.
Yeah. You're just tiptoeing here as you're just describing this. But it's a lie.
But the New York Times puts out the story. CNN is analyzing it. I wonder if the hits on Biden are going to come because the people on the left just view him. And believe me, in the media, they look at Joe Biden and say he's old school.
Mm-hmm.
They want somebody who is the new left.
Right.
And so I just wonder if the hits, and you and I talked about this, once the campaign starts going, will Biden start taking hits and will they start going after him to try to whittle down the lead that he has?
Yeah, I think that's the question, and because they really don't care if he's the nominee. I mean, at this point, I don't. But again, what do you do? You're clearly motivated if you're in the liberal media to make it happen so that Trump doesn't win. But who is that? Who is that that's going to get that energy? If not Biden, who?
I don't know. I think you made one of the greatest observations a few weeks ago when you said to me in a pre-show meeting, then you said it on the air, but you said, you know, I've been looking at the rallies going on.
Right.
And then I go to a Trump rally.
Right.
Trump, who's been doing this for three and a half years now, there's 1,000 times more excitement in a Trump rally than any of the Democrats.
Yes. I mean, they are with
him. That was a great observation, though.
And the energy isn't there.
on the left. Here's your forecast.
Winter-like weather still hanging on. We had a frost advisory for upstate New York and northern PA yesterday at this time. Today, we could see some mixed precip, mountain snow, in portions of Washington and Oregon. The major threat for severe weather today will be in eastern Texas. We have a heavy band of showers expected today in northern Texas, eastern Texas, the Ark-La-Tex area. That'll add to flooding in the region. Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, western PA, and the Mid-Atlantic all set to receive rain. Humidity will be building in the south. Rain likely due to some afternoon building of thunderstorms. Temperatures could be as much as 10 to 20 degrees above normal in the northern plains today. As hurricane season for the Atlantic continues to unfold, we're watching a system in the Gulf of Mexico, which will bring a minimum of heavy rainfall likely to spread over southeastern Texas and Louisiana into Thursday. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Their DPF is cleaned. Their DEF is in the SCR. Their ELDs are up to date. But their CDLs are expired. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So yesterday the market went up a lot. What was it, 500 points or so?
Right.
Markets rallied as the Federal Reserve officials said, this is Jerome Powell, the Fed chairman, indicated that they could respond to any economic deterioration by cutting interest rates. And so I think that a market that's looking at the possibility of a downturn in the economy,
right,
and basically all trade related, this is tariff related, all of this is tariff related. We do not know how or when these trade issues will be resolved. We are closely monitoring the implications of these developments for the U.S. economic outlook. And as always, we will act appropriate to sustain the expansion, as you noticed. And again, I mean, this is where we criticized the president when he was talking about the trade, that tariffs are good and will help an economy and brings in tax dollars. And he's throwing out all this optimistic crap that's BS. We said, don't do that. Be straight with the American people. Say, look, tariffs are going to hurt us. They hurt them. They hurt us. But we need to hurt them. And we believe if we hurt them more than we hurt us, that we can eventually negotiate a deal. Be honest with the American public. Mm-hmm. Don't BS them and say, tariffs are great for us, and we're bringing in record amounts of money. You're right. BS. And by the way, you're lying to your constituents. You're lying to the people that most invested in you. Don't do that.
That's, you know, that's the thing, is that you're trying to deliver a promise you know that won't be kept.
Right.
Know? And because, or you could go about it the other way, and that is, if you believe in tariffs, then go that route. Make that your policy.
Make that your policy. But don't say one thing when you know it's not true. And that's what upsets me on this, because I believe for all the great things that Trump has done and the things that I disagree with what he has done, I don't believe there's any other choice. Right. And there's no reason to do it.
Right.
There's no reason. This is what's so frustrating with this president when he says things that aren't true. Is the fact of is that he doesn't need to do it with his base. His base would stick with him. If he came out and said, look, on the tariff thing, it hurts them and it hurts us. But we believe the hurt on them will be greater and we'll have a better negotiating point down the road.
Right.
Well, everybody knows that to begin with. Why pretend it's something else?
Well, and that's it. I think he has this president, without a doubt, has better negotiating skills than most modern presidents, I think. So use those.
Yeah.
That it is returning to the table with Mexico after you, a couple of weeks ago, were asking for the Democrats in the House to get the deal done on USMCA doesn't make any sense. Because if you're saying, well, we're going to impose these tariffs, well, now you've
what incentive is there to finish the deal on USMCA?
There is none.
No. And you should have, whatever you were trying to get, you should have gotten with USMCA. The border problem isn't new. The caravan problem coming through, that's what the latest is. The president is trying to get, force Mexico to stop those caravans, control that problem on their side. And I agree with them on that. They need to do it. But they're battling the cartels like they have been for a long time. The cartels are paying for those caravans to get through.
It will be interesting to see what happens in the Senate this week, because you had Republicans in the Senate stating, look, you've overstepped your bounds. If we're going to put tariffs on Mexico outside of trade, that's up to Congress, not to you.
Right.
That right. The authority that Congress gave you was to freeze assets in countries. It mm-hmm. was not to put tariffs on. Mm-hmm. Problem is, Congress wasn't specific when they gave the president that emergency authority.
Right.
And so the president is claiming that this is an emergency. The problem is here, as I said, nobody trusts the president now when it comes to trade. And we're talking about other countries. It's like Great Britain right now. Oh, we can come to a deal. Think Great Britain really believes that you will deal with them in an honest way when you are all ready to sign the free trade agreement with Mexico, and all of a sudden the last second, boom, out of nowhere, no, tariffs are going on and this is what it's going to be. Well, that's not, if you wanted that, it should have been in the deal.
Right.
You should have put that in the deal, but not to put it in the deal and then back off and say, well, this is outside of the deal. No, it's not outside the deal.
No.
And other countries are going to look at it and say, you are not being straight up with us. You won't be. You will agree with trade deals, and then you'll go on another tangent in order, you know, to negotiate a different point. You'll break an agreement that you've already made with us.
And what happens as a result of that, they're more inclined to find different trade routes with different nations.
Right.
So
that's the fear that you have.
You establish a new supply chain for whatever item or items it is, and that becomes the rule of the day. I mean, that's what happened with the tariffs with Mexico when we talked about initially. They said in terms of pork, they said, we're not going to let our people, you know, pay the price here. We'll find other suppliers. And that's what they have to do.
You have Senate Republicans Rand Paul saying, look, I agree with the president on the majority of what he's doing. I even agree with the problem on immigration.
Right.
But he does not have the authority to do that. That authority is with Congress. Mm-hmm. And because I agree with the president doesn't mean I'm going to give up congressional authority and pretend it doesn't exist. We played right. that audio cut from Rand Paul last hour. Mm-hmm. And I agree with the president, but he does not have the authority to do this. So what will Senate Democrats do? I don't know. I still doubt that they have the votes to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
I still think they'd be short on the votes. They believe that they will have Democrat votes for it in the House and the Senate, and enough in the House to override a veto. Here's the thing, because Democrats have come out and said they are against the tariffs. But are they? If the Democrats believe that the president is cutting his own throat economically speaking by putting all these tariffs on, would they help the president? Would they help, in essence, economically the president by having a vote that could override the veto, which may mean that the economy grows faster instead of growing slower?
I think what they realize now, Julian Castro in an interview recently said that the tariffs on Mexico are a stupid move. I think the only play for them is to counter the president, because they also know that any tariff is going to be short-lived. It's not going to get to the point, because even if the president is reluctant to do it, his advisors will ultimately win. And like with steel and aluminum, those tariffs won't be in place long enough to do permanent damage, or not permanent, but real damage to the economy. So they know it's a bluff, and you cannot stand with this president if you have a D by your name.
By the way, I'm still these are just questions I'm asking. I'm not mm-hmm. really making statements, because right. my statement won't be. I've delayed my statement till next week.
right.
Because he's been out.
We don't know.
Because he's been out of town. He's been out of the country for 3 days. And I've said this president, when he makes a proclamation like this, you need to wait 7 or 10 days to find out if it's really what he meant or what he did not mean, and
what eventually happens out of it. And since he's been out of the country, so we're asking more questions than anything else. In other news out there, hours after the Department of Justice slammed House Democrats for planning a contempt vote against Attorney General Bill Barr and charged that Democrats had privately admitted their subpoena requests were overbroad, House Judiciary Committee Chairman Gerald Nadler announced late Tuesday that he is open to negotiating with the Department of Justice without conditions. The remarkable turn of events is from Fox News, reopened the possibility that Barr's contempt vote may be postponed or canceled if both sides return to the negotiating table. Look, Democrats are trying to stretch this out. The last thing they want is an end game.
Right.
If they put the contempt vote out there and they get the contempt of Congress, nothing happens.
It's over. And
it's over.
And nothing's going to happen. They don't get their grandstand moment. It assures that William Barr will not be sitting before them answering questions. What they want instead, you know, if they can't, because those, we said from the beginning, it's ridiculous. The attorney general's not going to answer to staff attorneys on Capitol Hill.
He doesn't
answer to them. Lawmakers, yes. And he said he would.
And
he's also not going to bring the fully unredacted report to them. So this, I think, is, and they know it's not going to go anywhere. So what's their best play?
Stretch it out.
You still have an opportunity to have William Barr in front of you, and you get to shame him publicly for a little while longer. You get to attack his credibility in front of him and in front of the American people.
I want to play audio here because the other big news yesterday, Christopher Steele agreeing to talk to U.S. investigators about the origins of the whole Russian collusion farce. Remember, Christopher Steele was the one that went, apparently, as we've all been told, to the Russians in order to get dirt on Donald Trump. The dirt ended up being false. He is going to speak to investigators. Here's Joe DiGenova on Fox News last night.
Well, he's obviously made a strategic decision because he's going to be interviewed by John Durham. It's not the Inspector General from the Department of Justice who's going to talk to him because he doesn't have any reason to talk to Mr. Horowitz. He's going to talk to John Durham and his people. So there's obviously some sort of deal that's been worked out. This is great news. According to some reports, there are limitations on his testimony. I can't believe that Durham would agree to such limitations. But this is what's important. He has to tell the truth to Durham, because even though his testimony will be given overseas, he can be indicted in the United States if he lies to Durham. So I assume he's going to tell the truth, because this is the big casino now. And what he's going to prove is that the FBI lied in the FISA warrants, and they lied to Congress, and they lied to everybody about what they knew about Steele's behavior. This is the walls are beginning to close in on the FBI fraudsters.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see where that goes. But wow, I think it is a really big deal that Durham is going to have him sitting in, well, not literally, because he's going to be across the pond doing it, but he's going to have him available to him.
Well, the question is, well, Steele doesn't have to testify.
Right.
He's doesn't live in not a United States citizen. He doesn't have to testify.
So what's the deal?
So why is he? And we played earlier from CNN, Phil Mudd, their consultant, and nobody really knows. I mean, he was saying, well, he wants to get back into the business and he needs credibility. He's never going to have credibility anymore.
I don't see that ever happening.
Everybody's trying to think what is his motivation to do so. I can't tell you what his motivation is.
Because is it that Durham has something, which would mean that Barr had something that could lead to charges from the United States
against Steele.
Against Steele,
that's a possibility.
And there, and that they've made a deal.
I don't know. We've studied this pretty hard. I don't know what crime Christopher Steele might have committed.
Right.
There's no law about getting opposition research. There's no law about somebody collecting false information from the Russians. The wrongdoing, the law breaking would be with the FBI and intelligence agencies if they knowingly used false information and sold it as intelligence.
Could it be a wire transfer or something technical?
A Manafort thing, something completely outside of it.
Where you would go to prison in the U.S.?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Shell recently launched Shell Rotella T615W40 Full Synthetic. Megan Pino is Shell Rotella Global Brand Manager and tells us what was behind the development and more about the product.
We are excited to launch this new full synthetic Shell Rotella T615W40. This is the first time we have a full synthetic in 15W40 viscosity range. We know that truckers love 15W40. That is the primary viscosity grade used in the U.S. and Canada and really in many parts of the world as well. So our customers can enjoy some of the benefits of cold temperature properties, low temperature and high temperature, allowing for the oil to flow faster into the engine and protect it better. Having a full synthetic also allows for extended drain opportunities for those that are trying to push the limits a little bit. But we always recommend following their manufacturer recommendations and doing oil analysis to ensure that they are changing when appropriate.
For more, go to Rotella.com. This engine report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. The president tweeted anything in the last 15 minutes or so?
I have not. Let me go back and nothing.
No cycle Bette Midler stuff or anything like that. That tweet today was just classic.
Wow. About
Joe Biden.
It's, it'll be interesting to see when he gets back home from the UK where that goes in the Senate on the tariff thing. And, you know, more talk. I mean, if you think about the tariff thing with Mexico, it's brought back, I guess, the conversation about the wall, the border, controlling it all, and everything else. And we'll see what will happen in the next few days. And then, of course, everything else. Are we going to learn something about the IG report anytime soon? Were those false reports coming from Fox News the other day, or is it on its way in a matter of days?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.